I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. Monday, November 4th, our second show of the day. I'm Will Brinson. I'm the host. We have our Sunday recap show that's in your podcast feed. Make sure and check that out. It's like an hour and 40 minutes on all the games from Sunday. We leave no stone unturned. No fun, no fact left unfunned or something. No dunk left undunked. I don't know what I'm talking about. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. If you love the show, leave a review. It's a huge help for us. We greatly appreciate it. If you like the show and if you're new, old, whatever it is, you haven't left a five-star review, drop one in there. We're trying to hit a certain number. We're getting closer, and we appreciate you guys helping us out. Now, though, our attention needs to be turned to Monday Night Football. And by the way, after the break, we'll talk to Jason Lockenfora, CBS Sports NFL Insider, about various coaching situations, quarterback situations, what the hell is going on with the Browns. But for now, we need to take a look at the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Jets with my man, Jared Dubin. Dubs, what's up, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. You haven't had to stress Cowboys football for 2 weeks. How's it feel?
Feels fine. You know, how did you guys do an hour and 40 minutes on yesterday's games? There was like one good game.
Here's what happened. We did.
Did you do like a eulogy for the Bears? And
no, you know, we did. I think it ended up being like 45 minutes on the Patriots game, the Browns game, and the Dolphins game somehow. And the Dolphins game was exciting. And that's interesting. Like, you know, there's a lot of fallout from that potentially.
I got to ask though, are we still getting tweets about people saying that the Bears aren't going to regress this season? Are they still angry?
You know what? There's a suspicious lack of Bears tweets out there from angry Bears fans.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Weird how that works. To the matter at hand though, Monday Night Football, 8:15 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, as it always is, Boog and Tess calling the game. Cowboys at Giants. You've got the preview up on the site. People should make sure and read it. Dubin's been fairly spot on, although I don't know that we were entirely accurate during last week's Thursday night show. That's okay. The Cardinals made a game of it. What's the most interesting thing about this game for you?
I mean, I guess it's basically just will the Cowboys do what they know will work against the Giants, or will they do what they feel comfortable with? And just put the ball in Zeke's hands and just run against a team whose run defense is quite good and will probably get better with Leonard Williams and whose pass defense is terrible.
The Giants are a poor man's Eagles, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, I mean, like the Eagles, the Cowboys beat the snot out of the Eagles on primetime, Sunday Night Football. We're all wondering, like, which team's going to go into this the next week, with a tough loss. Will the Cowboys go into their bye on a four-game losing streak? They did not, 37-10. If you want to beat the Giants, we've seen multiple teams do this.
Including the Cowboys in week one.
Yeah, you just don't bother running. You pass the ball. And you can run, you know, once you get a lead, but I mean, you just pass the ball and then make Danny Dimes try to come back on you. It was Eli Manning week one, of course. Do you think that they can carry that over? And are you concerned that with 2 weeks to tinker and tamper and get his grubby little fingers in there that Jason Garrett's going to have his hands on his playbook?
Well, I mean, the answer to the latter question is yes. I'm always concerned about Jason Garrett getting his hands on the offense and deciding to be overly conservative with the decision making and the play calling and everything. That's been an ongoing concern for me since, carry the wand, like 2007, probably.
Yeah, sure.
Ever since
he infiltrated the organization as a rogue agent to take down Wade Phillips.
Yeah. I'm always concerned about that. If they just throw against the Giants, I'm not concerned at all about the Cowboys having success. I mean, you look at the Giants secondary, it's just been flat out like it's been a disaster. Janoris Jenkins has been sort of up and down, shadowing number one receivers. He was not active week one against the Cowboys. He had an injury, so DeAndre Baker wound up getting torched by Amari Cooper for a lot of the game, and that has led to DeAndre Baker getting torched by pretty much everybody throughout his rookie season. It's not a good situation for him. I think he's going to be a good player. The pass rush just for the Giants just really never gets home basically ever. And teams have basically all day to throw on these Giants defensive backs. I mean, the Giants are 30th in pressure rate at Football Outsiders. It just puts way too much, pun not intended, but it puts way too much pressure on the coverage on the back end. And you look at Baker and you look at Grant Haley, who plays in the slot for them. I mean, those guys have given up 60 catches on 76 throws in their direction for 893 yards, 6 touchdowns, and no picks. I mean, both of these guys are really just getting lit up. And I would imagine Baker's going to see a lot of Michael Gallup, who has beaten significantly better corners than DeAndre Baker so far this season. And until like 2 weeks ago, I think was averaging over 100 yards a game in 4 games. If the Cowboys are willing to throw, they should have a lot of success. The offensive line is back healthy again. And when they're healthy, Dak essentially doesn't get touched. And when he doesn't get touched, I mean, he's just killing teams right now from clean pockets. He's got a 119 passer rating when he's not under pressure. I mean, it's easy money when you're throwing from that kind of a pocket, and it's easy money when you're throwing against the Giants. So that leads to one conclusion. We know that the Cowboys, like, they like to go away from this thing that works basically whenever possible. That's sort of what spurred their 3-game losing streak.
Yeah. The Giants are giving up an average of 264 passing yards per game, and that includes a 121 passing yard effort against the Redskins in a casual walk-away 24-3 Giants win, and 89 passing yards by the Arizona Cardinals, who didn't need to pass because they were beating the crap out of the Giants the entire time, and Chase Edmonds ran wild. So they got that going for them. Smart teams. I mean, the Lions, 316 passing yards. Patriots, 313 passing yards. Vikings, 279. Buccaneers, 355. Bills, 237. Cowboys, 405.
Yeah, in the first game, it was ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
Dak was nearly perfect in that first game. It might have been the best game I've seen him play in his career. Like, not that it was all that difficult against a team that got basically no pressure and put up no resistance on the back end. But I mean, 25 of 32 for 405 and 4 touchdowns. I mean, Cooper and Gallup and Cobb were open basically the entire game, got both Witten and Blake Jarwin in the end zone. And I don't think that the Giants coverage unit has gotten that much better since then. And I do think their run defense has gotten better. They just added Leonard Williams, who, like, the best thing he does is stuff the run.
Yeah.
Now they have him and Dalvin Tomlinson and Dexter Lawrence on the inside. The best thing this team does is probably stop the run.
Dave Gettleman is assembling 14 run stuffers, and you won't be able to stop him.
Yeah, I mean, I will say Dexter Lawrence has been pretty good rushing the passer as well. It's just that, I mean, when you're going up against Travis Frederick and Zach Martin, it's a little bit different than when you're going up against anybody else.
How important is this game in New York? Because really fascinating schedule for the Cowboys over the next 6 weeks. They're at the Giants. If you don't like the Cowboys, if you don't like seeing the Cowboys, I got bad news for you.
Yeah.
You're going to see the Cowboys a lot over the next 6 weeks. Here's maybe actually 7, maybe actually 8 weeks. Because
they're on primetime 4 times, I think, in the next 6 weeks.
Well, but right. So they're at Monday Night Football tonight, Sunday Night Football next week at home against the Vikings. 1 o'clock in Detroit on November 17th, 4:25 PM at the Patriots on Fox. That's guaranteed to be America's game of the week with Troy and Joe Buck. Then they get the Bills at home on CBS on Thanksgiving. Then the next week, they're at the Bears on Thursday Night Football. And then the following 2 weeks, they play the Rams at home, and they're at the Eagles in the late slate on Fox. I mean, those are both going to be the games of the week. You are going to see a crap load of Cowboys. Like, the only game that isn't going to be prominently featured on your television involving Dallas over the next 8 weeks is that Lions game.
Yeah. I mean, it's – excuse me. It's four primetime games and three probably late afternoon national games in 8 weeks. That's what happens when, you know, you're America's team.
I guess. Well, how big is this game, though? Because we mentioned the next, you know, mentioned that slate, but like three of the next four games, including this one, are on the road. Mm-hmm. Not like it's, you know, I mean, not like that's the end of the world. Like, they can play, you know, they can play in Detroit. I don't think anybody expects them to go to New England and beat the Patriots, but given what we saw from New England on Sunday night, maybe the Cowboys can use the old Jason Garrett formula and run the ball against them. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more big, not necessarily because the upcoming games are on the road, than because, you know, you want to maintain some semblance of a lead over the Eagles, who are now, oh, they're 5-4, actually. I thought they were 4-4 for some reason. I guess they haven't had their bye yet. But yeah, I mean, you got to maintain that division lead. It'd be a half game if they win. And if you lose, all of a sudden you're looking up at the Eagles in the top of the division.
Yeah. And with, you know, the Vikings coming to town, licking their wounds off a loss, and Patriots looming in a couple of weeks with a look ahead game against the Giants. I mean, against the Lions. What can the Giants do to stop them? Just hope they run the ball?
Yeah. I mean, hoping they run the ball is a good plan. They gotta find a way to get pressure. It's just, I think it's going to be difficult for them. They don't have a very good pass rush. Their best pass rushers probably come on the inside, and the Cowboys, when their guys are healthy, don't really give up much pressure on the inside. I mean, the guy who's been beaten the most this season is Connor Williams, who gets a lot of help from Travis Frederick in the passing game. And it's tough, because even if you flush Dak out from that interior pass rush, I mean, he's so good at making plays on the run. And even this year on the run to the outside, he's been good, where usually he would step up through the pocket. He's now gotten better at throwing outside of the pocket. It's strange, you know, the way that, that him and Carson Wentz are talked about, because like Dak is the more mobile player, I think. But Wentz is the one who likes to get outside the pocket and throw from there, whereas Dak is usually an up-the-middle scrambler. And I think the narrative, I guess you would call it, about them is probably the opposite. But I think Dak has even been pretty good flushing out to his right and his left this year and making throws that way. I mean, he's thrown a couple of picks that way. There was one against the Dolphins that was especially egregious, where he said after the game, he was like, yeah, I just got greedy. He basically had nobody open down the right sideline and was like, screw it, I'm going to take a shot. And it went into a crowd of three defenders and got picked. But I think other than that, he's been pretty good, even when getting out on the outside, which is generally not what he likes to do when scrambling.
Okay. What about with the when the Giants have the football? What do you think about Daniel Jones? Six starts in. Is he good? Bad? Do we know enough?
I don't think we know enough yet. I mean, the one thing that I think you can definitely say is he is a really good athlete, and that gives you a leg up on other guys at the position. Like, Eli Manning is not necessarily a fit for a quarterback in this era, where you have to be able to make plays with your legs, not just running, but in terms of escaping from defenders and throwing on the run. That was never really his strength. He was a guy who was going to sit in the pocket, never really moved around all that much, even, you know, when he was a young guy. Daniel Jones is not like that. He can, you know, break free from the pocket. He can make plays on the run. He can make plays running the ball himself. So I think that the talent is certainly there to be a playmaker. His issue is decision-making and turnovers. I mean, he, I think, has fumbled like 7 times or something like that already. He's got 7 picks. He can't put the ball in position to be taken away as many times as he has been. Can't take as many sacks as he has been. And, you know, after that first game against the Bucks, when he was just unbelievable under pressure, he was, taking this from Pro Football Focus, he was 14 of 19 for 243 yards and a touchdown in that game against the Bucks. That's like a 143 passer rating. But in the five games since then, he's just 30 of 63 for 340 yards, two touchdowns, and four interceptions under pressure. That's 48.4 passer rating on plays where he's pressured. Obviously, that's really, really bad. And in the five games since, he's been under pressure on 40% of his dropbacks, which, again, is really bad. You look at the Cowboys, their pass rush has been quite good this season. They've ranked really highly in ESPN's pass rush win rate statistic all season, as well as pressure rate at Football Outsiders. And, I mean, they've got Robert Quinn not coming off a two-game suspension and now healthy after having that rib injury a couple weeks ago. They've got DeMarcus Lawrence now multiple months removed from his offseason shoulder surgery, and they just added Michael Bennett. So it seems like they're going to be able to get a decent amount of pressure, and it's going to be on Jones, who has not been very good at handling that, to either remain calm or find a way to make some plays with his legs.
Seems easy enough. This is the first time he's going to have all his weapons there. Do you think that they're going to – can they utilize – I mean, it feels like if you're Pat Shurmur, how do you attack this?
Well, I think, Sterling Shepard is still out. They put him back.
You're right. They put him back in the concussion protocol. That's right.
Yeah.
But, so if you're Pat Shurmur, you got Evan Engram, Saquon Barkley, Darius Slayton, Golden Tate. I mean, you got decent weapons. How do you attack the Giants? I mean, is this a turn into a mud fight and try to, I mean, I don't know if you can turn it into a shootout. And by the way, home team's undefeated so far this week.
Interesting. Yeah. I kind of like Darius Slayton, by the way. That guy seems like a playmaker. I think he's been pretty good. The big thing is against the Cowboys, I think you want to try to attack Chidobe Awuzie, who's their number two corner on the outside. That's something a bunch of teams have tried to do this year, and he's just really not been very good at all. Byron Jones, since he went back to playing full time after, I think, week two, he's been back playing really well again. But Awuzie has not been very good in coverage. The issue with that is if you're attacking him, it's probably going to be with, you know, not Tate because he works out of the slot a lot of the time, not Slayton because he might see a lot of Byron Jones. It might be like Benny Fowler, I guess, or something like that at this point. Early in the season, especially Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, who the Cowboys obviously, you know, Pro Bowl linebackers last year were unbelievable. They have been pretty inconsistent in coverage against tight ends and running backs this season. And Jeff Heath, the safety, has been, you know, his usual liability in coverage himself. So that leads you to think that, you know, Evan Engram could get a bunch of catches. Saquon Barkley could get a bunch of catches. But the thing is, the Cowboys scheme is basically to play soft zones on the back end and allow those catches. They want you checking down to your tight end, checking down to your running back, checking down to your guy in the slot, and then they just come up and rally to the ball and make tackles. You got to have the patience to just keep taking those dink and dunk throws and dink and dunk your way down the field and not try to force things, because if you try to force things downfield, you might not have the openings, and that means their pressure is going to hit home.
Oh, man. All right, let's get to the game. Props over under Daniel Jones, 245.5 passing yards.
I think I'll go over there. I could see both teams, you know, moving the ball pretty well. I think the Cowboys could move the ball pretty easily against the Giants, which means they're going to have to the Giants will have to turn to the air. And I think they'll give you those completions to essentially the two best playmakers on the team in Engram and Saquon. And I think those guys could make a little bit happen after the catch. Like if he throws 35, 40 times, like I think he pretty easily gets to that 240 yards.
Okay. What about for Dak? 269.5 yards.
Yeah, I'll go over there too. I think he's hit that in almost every game this season, if I'm remembering correctly. And the way to beat the Giants is through the air. And he threw for 405 in the first game against them. I think he should get there.
This year are 405, 269, 246 against Miami. Didn't get there. 223 against New Orleans, 463 against the Packers, 278 against the Jets, and 239 against the Eagles. So, I mean, he's been very close in games, I guess. I mean, you know, like they blew out Philly.
Yeah, blew out Philly, blew out Miami, didn't really throw very much.
Not by the Jets.
New Orleans held them down. Yep. The Jets, that was a very strange game. He still managed to hit that over. Yeah. And then Green Bay, they were down a bunch. I mean, not that they weren't having success throwing early in the game. He had Amari Cooper for 2 touchdowns, but Cooper dropped one that made it a pick and then fell down on the other one. So they, what'd they throw? 463 in that game. That's a lot too. I mean, I think that this, neither team's defense is all that good. I think both teams could move the ball tonight.
And I would expect to, like, I mean, anybody thinking the Giants are just going to come out and be dead in the water? I mean, this is it's a home Monday night game, and they have a rookie quarterback who they need to show to the world can be good. And they have Saquon Barkley, and they have some talent in the passing game. Like, they're going to come out motivated to win this game against a division rival. It's not like this is just a freebie, you know? I mean, right? Like,
I would think so, but I could also see, you know, not that Pat Shurmur is the most aggressive coach in the world. Like, I could see him saying, you know, we got to give the ball to Saquon 30 times so we could grind this game out. If they do that, I think that's not the best idea in the world. You could find yourself in a hole pretty early.
Yeah. And they kept it close to the Cowboys early and through the first half in week one.
They gave up touchdowns on 5 straight drives, and that was basically it.
Saquon Barkley, over under 75.5 rushing yards.
Oh, is there a total yards prop? I like that much better.
I can try and find it for you. While we're looking for it, or while I'm looking for it, Zeke Elliott over under 89.5 rushing yards. That's a lot of rushing yards.
Yeah, that is a lot of rushing yards. I mean, Saquon had like whatever he had, like the 75 or 80 yard run against the Cowboys in the first game, and he wound up going over, or whatever it was, 60 yard run. He had 11 carries for 120 yards in that first game. If he breaks a big run like that, you get your over right there. Zeke did, I think he played his lowest snap rate of the season in week one against the Giants. He only played 54% of snaps. He was obviously coming off the holdout, only had 13 carries for 53 yards. But basically in the games, other than the one where they were completely shut down by New Orleans and the game against Green Bay where they really didn't run at all, he's had 100 yards at least in every other game. So I think even if the Cowboys are doing a lot of throwing to win the game, it'll be, you know, a win-to-run kind of scenario. And I think he winds up getting over that 80-something yards.
Okay. I found a Saquon versus Zeke, more total yards from scrimmage. It's an even money proposition. Who would you take?
I think I would take Saquon just because of the passing game involvement.
Like, the Zeke game, has been game script where like he's down. How about over under 115.5 rushing plus receiving for Saquon?
That seems like a really good number. I might go over just because of the checkdowns. Yeah. If Jones is willing to take them, they should be there for him.
Yeah, they'll be there. Evan Ingram, over under 46.5 receiving yards.
Over.
Okay.
Tight ends are good against the Cowboys, man. They give up those catches in the short zones. Yeah.
And no Leighton Vander Esch in this game either, right?
I'm not sure if he was officially ruled out. I know he had been limited or missing in practice. He had that neck injury a couple of weeks ago.
The question is that he's going to miss. I didn't start him in my dynasty IDP league because of a concern about his injury. Likely out for Leighton Vander Esch.
Limited.
It doesn't sound like it would be really short-sighted to play him in this game.
Yeah, he's officially listed as questionable. Same with Anthony Brown, the guy who's the slot corner. But if Anthony Brown misses the game, I mean, they have Jordan Lewis as the number 4 corner has been, I mean, he's been their best defensive back this season. That shouldn't be quite as big of a deal as if Van Der Esch has to miss the game. Although, you know, that said, Sean Lee is still there as essentially the third linebacker, and Joe Thomas has played pretty well when filling in for any of those guys this year too.
Okay. Amari Cooper over under 82.5 receiving yards. I mean, these are big numbers.
Yeah, I think I'll go over there too. Okay. Although actually in a road game, he hasn't been, I can't remember who keeps posting these stats, but Amari in whatever it is, I think 16 or 17 games now with the Cowboys, he's unbelievable at home at Jerry World and not quite as good on the road. I mean, you even look at that this year, his home games are 6 for 106 and a touchdown, 6 for 88 and two touchdowns, 11 for 226 and a touchdown, and then 5 for 106. And his road games are 4 for 44 and a touchdown, 5 for 48 and 1 for 3 when he left the game against the Jets after three plays. So,
yeah, you're right. Yeah. He's way better at home. Why is that's weird?
Yeah, I'm not sure. And it's not like Dak is significantly better at home than on the road. It's just, you know, Cooper seems to be much better there. So
listen, well, they play.
My initial reaction was over, but I might actually go under and say, like, they get Michael Gallup more.
Man, that is crazy, those splits. Mm-hmm. Although I guess when you factor in, like, Green Bay, he had the 226 when they were, like, storming back. And then
yeah, but he probably should have had, like, 150-something yards on the first two drives. Like, yeah. Dak had him for essentially a 50-yard touchdown, and he just dropped the ball into Jair Alexander's hands. And then he beat Alexander on, I think, the second or third play of the next drive, but he tripped while running to the end zone, and it turned what should have been like a 70-yard touchdown into a 40-yard gain. So he should have had an even bigger game in that game against Green Bay.
What a bizarre split. I was trying to think if it was like – because like he played Josh Norman in week two, and I know Josh Norman isn't good, but he's a decent matchup for Amari in terms of size and all that. Mm-hmm. Marshawn Lattimore in week four at New Orleans, and then
he got hurt three plays into the game against the Jets.
Oh, Amari did. That's right. All right, so there's sort of an explanation there, maybe.
No, but this is going back to last year too. Even if you look at the last year's games, he was much better in Dallas. Yeah,
I'd split and take the under then. Yeah. What's your thought on a pick here? Cowboys. Oh wait, not gonna tell you. Do you know?
I don't know, but I have 30-20 Cowboys.
Hmm. That's pretty good. Cowboys minus 6.5. Over-under's 48.5. So you're all over. Got the over. Cowboys in the over. I think that'll be probably the popular play.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's two teams that have the capability of moving the ball. One team with, I mean, the best offense in the league by DVOA so far. Top three in the run and the pass against the defense that has been quite bad throughout the season. And then, you know, the Giants offense hasn't been all that bad. I think Jones has the ability to make plays, and the Cowboys defense hasn't been very good this year. So I kind of like a bunch of points to be scored.
Understandably, appreciate the cat. Yeah. Look, I'm with you. I mean, I get why you would like it.
Yeah. And it's not that cold here today either in New York.
So it could be warm for the Cowboys. Okay. Cowboys like 30.
So that's, you know, that's nice.
Yeah, that is nice. Cowboys 30. It's like 50 here in North Carolina. Cowboys 30, Giants 20. Dubin likes the Cowboys. The over. And slam that Evan Engram over prop bet while you're at it. All right, Dubs. We will talk to you Thursday, buddy.
Sounds good, man.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time to talk to the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Jason Lockenfora. JLC, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, my friend?
Not much. Week 9, almost in the books. It is very bizarre to me how – it's not bizarre. I mean, I'm used to it now, but, like, the way that sort of October and November just sort of cascade upon us.
Yeah.
It's always kind of shocking in the moment. Like, I understand it. It's a rhythm that I'm used to because I've been doing this for a long time, but it's like all of a sudden it's November, week 9, we're through week 9. And I mean, I don't want to suggest that we know what's going to happen during the NFL season, but I do think there are some things that were predictable about week 9, in their unpredictability. And I do think that we're starting to see a sense of how things might unfold with respect to certain classes within.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And no, some teams are telling us who they are. Like, they're showing their true colors.
Yeah.
And there's teams that you can start to look at and say, well, they're a whole hell of a lot closer to the dregs, right? There are, like you can now say the Browns are a whole lot closer to the Jets, Dolphins, Bengals, you know, I feel like I'm missing somebody in that group. Redskins, you know what I mean? Than they are to, I won't even say like the Patriots class, to that next class, if you want to say Ravens, Eagles, whatever. You know what I mean? Like they're.
So like what's crazy about Sunday, and let's talk about the Browns for a second too, and we'll get to the Ravens and we'll talk about some hot seats. But I mean, and I just think like I was sort of writing up the Browns as the lead to my Sorting the Sunday Pile column that'll be up shortly on the website. Cleveland, we looked at it and we're like, all right, listen. I mean, I said this a lot. I swear I did. You can go back and find it. It's all over the place. I said, look, the schedule is tough out of the gates.
Yes.
You have to win some games early. To stay in the hunt, and you know, like I guess the situation where this all derailed for the Browns was they couldn't win games early. They lost games because they were sloppy. You know, coming out of the bye, we knew at Patriots, at Broncos. I mean, those are just two tough games because of where they're being played and who they're playing against. And I just think that it's gone from the Browns have an easy schedule down the stretch to, oh look, these other teams had the Browns on their schedule very quickly.
Yes. You know,
like now
this was their Super Bowl. This had to be their Super Bowl. I mean, Mile High is tough, I guess, but they lost more games in September at Mile High this year than they had. Now, I know some of them were close or whatever, but
Brandon
still.
Brandon Allen was starting.
Dude, Brandon Allen's starting. You know that all Vic Fangio wants to do is run the ball anyway, right?
Yep.
Like, and now it's Brandon Allen on top of that, and they don't trust their offensive line at all in pass protection. And you've got these trap kickers coming off the edge. You know what I mean? Like, I just looked at that and said, I picked it as a best bet because I was like, this is one of those games where a team comes out and just says, you know, bleep you to everybody else. And I don't know that they had to, like, blow them out, but they had to at least look like a professional football operation. Like, we're all going to pull on the same page, like, in the same direction for four quarters. We might not be able to do it again next week, but we're going to at least show you what we're capable of. And they came out and tried to give the game away before it started almost. I mean, it was just like the same old crap. And the penalties, I mean.
Dude, Sean.
It started against Tennessee. Like, honestly, you go back to week one and go look at that box score, all the penalties and all the personal fouls. And then I think five guys got fined coming off that game week one. That's who they are.
Yeah. Dude, so Sean pointed this out on the podcast on Sunday night. It's pretty incredible. The Broncos didn't go into the Browns into the red zone one time in that game. They didn't go to the red zone once.
Yeah,
and they scored 24 points.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. Like, how do you not get in the red zone once and score 24 points? It was the bad tackling. It's worth noting.
Oh, the Noah Fant play. I mean,
incredible. The Browns season in a microcosm. Okay. So not to dive into the game itself, but sort of maybe spin it forward a little bit. They go out to Monday and, they announce that they have released Jermaine Whitehead, their linebacker who was on that Noah Fant play, couldn't tackle him. There's probably some mental health stuff going on there, but the guy goes on social media on Twitter and starts threatening to like beat up and cause bodily harm to fans and media members who were criticizing him. And he's like leaving the Browns address. I mean, one, do you think that is emblematic of everything that's going on? And two, like, should the Browns be worried about what this guy is going to do now that they've released him? It's a very,
I mean, NFL security exists for a reason. I would have to assume they're taking any threat seriously and acting accordingly. Like fire him today. Like, I get it. There's consequences for everybody, but like their issues go so far beyond, you know what I mean? A linebacker trying to tackle with his shoulder instead of wrapping somebody up. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, is that a symptom or a cause? Like, what's really going on there? Like, I mean, the quarterback, let's just start there.
Okay.
I mean, what's happened to him? I mean, like, he looks skittish. And I mean, people were saying Sam Darnold's seeing ghosts. Well, what's Baker Mayfield saying? Is he seeing Frankenstein? Is he seeing vampires? Like, what's going on there? I mean, it's his feet are never set. It looks like he's hyper coming out of the huddle. Yet they don't play with any pace. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know what. I can't figure them out. They can't figure themselves out. I think they're torn between wanting to just play rugby, which is with the state of that quarterback, probably what you need to do. But then also, you don't go out and make your slot receiver, you know, pay your slot receiver $16 million and go out and trade for Odell Beckham, you know what I mean, to run the ball 40 times.
Yeah.
But if they just run the ball 40 times, like, had they just run the ball 40 times and not turned it over three straight times to open up last week, I truly think they beat the Patriots in that game.
They were.
If they had just done what Baltimore did, yeah. Now they can't do it the way Baltimore does it, but there was a template there for them to turn their season around then, and they came out in that game and literally turned it over three straight times. They touched the football, and then they couple that with gifting Denver a lead Sunday when Cleveland can't play from behind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, why? You know who they could really use right now?
Hugh Jackson?
No, not that far.
Greg Williams?
None. Maybe. Duke Johnson.
Yeah.
With the state of that offensive line, like, he would be a perfect guy to throw 10. Like, just do what Pittsburgh did with Jalen Samuels. Just do what you have to do to survive and win the game. You know, don't worry about that, oh, we took this kid first overall. Do what you have to do to win the game. And showcasing, you know, Baker Mayfield and then him trying to showcase Odell and Jarvis in the limited way he's even able to do that is not winning you games. Not when you have this many penalties. Not when you're – they need to possess the ball. And they can. They have the capability to do it, but that doesn't seem to be who they want to be. But that and screen passes is who they have to be, given the offensive line, given the hole they've dug, and given the way the quarterback just looks. But it's much easier to fire a linebacker.
All right. So, look, Baker is not going anywhere. He's in his second year. I'm not out on Baker. I get that it's, look, I had a blast on Twitter, I'm sure you saw the picture of him.
That's good stuff.
It's incredible. Yeah. He looks like that was all fun. That's all fun and games. And I'm sure that Baker will come back and retweet something and mock everybody for mocking him, whatever. I mean, like, it's Twitter. It's just, we're joking around. I'm not out on him as a football player. I think he still flashes at times. Like, the great outlier of the season is that 40-25 ass kicking in Baltimore, right? I mean, you know, and you're right. They could have beaten the Patriots were it not for those three turnovers. They could have had the Browns. They could have had the Seahawks. Like, they weren't the 43-13 game against the Titans. To me, it all comes down to sloppy coaching. And this is another week for Freddie Kitchens. Do you think that he's going to get second year?
I don't know about that. I think that remains to be seen. They gave Hugh Jackson a second year. That's still, Planet Haslam. So until they win there, I have to look sideways at what they do. That I don't know. But he needs to be stripped of play calling duties. And you and I talked about that even after week one. And I'm like, look, at some point, if their season is teetering, and I would say it came even before this game, but especially after this game, I don't know why is Todd Monk in there? You know what I mean? Like, why, like, what, if not now, then, you know what I mean? Then make it the Freddie Kitchens show and let him do everything. Let him call the defense too. I mean, it's.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it's possible that, that they decide to take play calling duties away from Freddie Kitchens and let Todd Monken call plays, and that this team, which last year on, what's today? Oh man, look at that. November 4th, this team was 2-6-1.
Yeah.
And they are currently, I believe
two and six.
Goes on a tear and wins a bunch of games down the stretch.
I don't think they're finishing 5-2, even with the way the schedule sets up. I don't know, but you have to. Freddie Kitchens has had half a season to unlock this offense in any capacity. And say for periods of explosion out of the run game, it hasn't happened. hasn't happened remotely consistently. And I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't let somebody else take a crack here and see if they can get it turned around so that he can focus on other things. Like, I mean, all he did is say, when I was around there in the offseason, I don't coach penalties. We don't practice penalties. Well, that's not getting through. So maybe you need to send that message a different way, because you lead the league in all things penalty related, and it's not even that close.
Did you hear the line that they mentioned on the broadcast where it's like, he asked Parcells about it. He's like, yeah, I don't want to run them. You know, what can I do during the season? He's like, you're not winning. Who cares about their legs now?
I just feel bad for their fans, man. I really do. I'm with you. I mean, I assessed it. I'm on the radio there every week, and I've been telling people, don't jump off the, like, just trust me. Like, even if they're 2-5, the season starts in Denver. Like, that's, you know what I mean? You've got a chance now to make some hay. But the problem is they've got too big of a hole. And you know what? Look at the Steelers' schedule. They got it just as easy. And you know what I mean? And they've already got a 2-game lead on them. And then you start looking around the rest of the AFC. And, like, I thought they'd beat Denver. They'd get their footing back in it. And then the Buffalo game would be their Super Bowl. But they already, you know, but no, because they already lost the championship game. They already lost to Denver. I mean, this was their, if it wasn't their Super Bowl, it was their championship game.
Well, I mean,
just the way they lost it. I mean, it was so brownish. I mean, it's just like,
well, it just
undermining themselves.
They have 8 games remaining. Look, teams go on crazy winning streaks all the time. It would be really weird if this team, even as talented as they are, decided to suddenly turn it on. Do you think there's a chance that I actually think they're going to blow out the Bills this week? Like, they're going to have one of those great, like, weird random performances.
I thought that was going to be yesterday.
Yeah. Maybe they won't. I don't know.
I will say this.
Yeah,
I think Buffalo has allowed like 365 yards rushing the last 2 weeks.
Yep, Nick Chubb.
So, like, memo to the Browns. Like, you know, just look at the film the last 2 weeks on Buffalo. The Eagles did to them. And then look what Washington did to them. It's one thing to get gassed by the Eagles in a week where they kind of figure out their run schemes and they've got a multitude of weapons to attack you with and they've got a really good offensive line when everybody comes to play. It's another to have the Washington team with a tattered, you know, line and Adrian Peterson, who is not an effective player and hasn't been for a long time. He rolls up 100 on you in the first half with Dwayne Haskins making his first start and Bill Callahan, who basically, if you look at his play sheets, I think they have nothing but runs on them. You know what I mean? Like, no one has ever telegraphed, like, all I want to do is run. But, like, you think Zimmer likes to run the football? You think Fangio likes to run the football? Bill Callahan, hold my beer. And yet, you know what I mean? So we all knew it was coming, right? I mean, they played Haskins as a last resort. He's going against a tough defense on the road. And Peterson has 100-plus yards in the first half on the ground?
Yeah.
So, hey, Browns. Like, you know. And they're getting Kareem Hunt back, right? They get Kareem Hunt back next week. Like,
I mean, the Redskins
15 touches for Kareem Hunt, 25 touches for Nick Chubb.
The Redskins were getting creamed and running the ball with, like, not even trying to pass.
With impunity. Like, come on. Callahan's going to – as soon as he gets – you know – like, you get in the locker room, right, and then you start asking around, who's got the stat sheet? Like, you know, he just, boom, laser-like focus on rushing totals. Like, that's all he cares about. The rest of it, who cares?
Yeah. All right, let's talk about another. By the way, I think we could be headed, too, for a very big Odell Beckham blow-up. It's on should be on the radar with the cleat.
Oh, yeah.
And the sideline stuff. So we'll see how that goes. Another bad team, the New York Football Jets, went to Miami, lost the Adam Gase revenge game. They have sunk to a new low. They are behind the Dolphins in the standings.
I like Miami here. Like them on the money line. Thought they'd win outright. So that one did not surprise me at all. I mean, they've been trending up in their own weird way. I mean, I say that for a winless team. I mean, that shows you about the dregs of the NFL, doesn't it?
But if you watch
them, they had been playing more serviceable football for longer stretches of time than the Jets had lately.
The Dolphins have been trying, whereas the Jets have been not trying. And where are we at on Adam Gase in terms of his ability to retain his job? What's that?
I think it'll be tough. If Sam Darnold keeps looking like this, then I think the decision, like, I don't know. it's going to be really tough to make the argument that, okay, well, one off season of Joe Douglas, you know what I mean? And we'll get it all, you know, turned around. Like, I don't know, man. I think it's going to be a real uphill battle. And he doesn't have anybody in his corner there really either. You know, like, if you read any Jets coverage, like, the, you know what I mean? The people who cover that team are pretty much done with him. And the fans seem pretty much done with him. And within the building, I think there's some discord. So
how does that work from a power standpoint with Joe Douglas? Because, I mean, like, is Joe Douglas now?
This is on Johnson & Johnson. Like, let's, you know what I'm saying? This is at the very tippy top. I mean, building has been toxic through so many
I know.
You know what I mean? We're up to double digit names now. Like,
no, I know that, but I'm
just
saying,
going back to the end of Rex Ryan and Tannenbaum. Like, it's
right.
It's been a circus there forever. Like, it's on the owners. Joe Douglas has been there 6 months. Like, the decision to fire somebody or whatever. Like, that's ownership's got to own this. Ownership, own. You know what I mean? Like,
I know,
they're gonna have to come out in January or whatever.
I'm wondering,
and message something to their fan base.
I'm wondering how does it work from a procedural standpoint? Because Adam Gase basically hand selected Joe Douglas and brought him in to be his GM to work with him, right? Because Christopher Johnson sort of knew the job, doesn't really appear to know what he's doing. Now, does this work where at some point, like at this point, do you think that Joe Douglas and Adam Gase are tied at the hip? Are they separated? And like, where is the blame being pointed here? Because it feels like Adam Gase is doing everything he can to deflect blame onto Mike Maccagnan, either by putting his guys, you know, out for trade, cutting them, you know, complaining about their injuries, all of that. I mean, is Joe Douglas safe?
I take it over Joe Douglas's head. Like, okay. Woody and Chris Johnson are going to have to – well, I don't even know. Woody, I guess, I don't know, would have to be over Skype or whatever. You know what I mean? Call Joe Douglas into their office at some point here and say, hey – what is your evaluation of our coaching staff? And we understand, you know, your relationship with Adam and this long-term vision of you guys being able to, you know, coexist and prosper and get us out of this malaise. But you may not have that luxury.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think you give him a case to stump for and make the case for his head coach.
And then you
evaluate that along with everything else. But the problem is, like, they don't even talk to the right people. Like, a lot of times it's not just the owners. It's who the owners talk to and who's in the owner's ear and who swings sort of the narrative one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And they don't even have the right people doing that. So there's a reason why they keep making decisions that set them back. And that's why, I mean, it's Adam does some things that bring some of this on him without a doubt. But like this, I would also say he is a symptom, not a cause. I mean, the way he was hired, their whole coaching search, right? Like, it was just jet-like. And so it had a jet-like ending, and now it's having a jet-like season as a result of it. And then they're going to have to make more decisions. And if they keep making more jet decisions, then Joe Douglas isn't going to have a fighting chance, and neither will the next coach. But it's on ownership, man. You know, it is. It's completely, to me, on ownership.
No, I agree with you. All right. So we'll see how that plays out. If either of those teams decide to move on from their head coach, is Mike McCarthy, formerly the Green Bay Packers, who, by the way, looks like a fairly attractive candidate right now, given how things have gone, is he in play for either of these teams?
Before we get there, I got a hot take column for you.
Fire.
The Browns and Jets should trade head coaches now. Freddie Kitchens for Adam Gase.
Ooh, who says no? Who says no?
Like, why not, right? Give it a shot.
I kind of like that. Okay. Remember, we traded
theater.
Last year we traded – this isn't quite as scorching as trade Mike McCarthy and John Harbaugh.
Yeah.
But makes sense. I mean, would Adam Gase be better in – Adam Gase and Baker Mayfield would be like –
something.
fire. Like
that would be hot.
It'd be like if you like filled up a you spray your weeds with, you get the big gallon thing on the back, you know,
yeah.
You fill it up with gasoline and then the other person has a blowtorch.
Yeah.
And you just shoot at each other. It would go nuclear.
Dude, and Freddie Kitchens in New York? Come on, man.
From a pure media
perspective, it would be gold.
You know they sell fried chicken down there at that sushi restaurant. What? This is wild, man.
So I hijacked it. Where were we going?
Mike McCarthy in play?
Yeah. I mean, look, he was a guy who John Dorsey could have gone to, and they obviously have ties, and he wasn't even really a part of that Browns thing. So that, you know, I don't know if he would do a 180 like that or not. But Mike McCarthy is certainly, you know, sitting pretty. I mean, I got a hold of sort of the names that are generating the most sort of support from the NFL's Football Operations Committee, where, you know what I mean, they recommend to the owners certain, you know, candidates for head coach and candidates for GM.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of it guys, as, you know, people in the industry have been talking about for a while. And not that everybody lives and dies with this list, but right now it's a lot of guys who've done it before. And I think that will be the trend. I mean, we might have 3 or 4 one and dones. You know what I mean? Like, that resonates with owners. They don't want to give guys 4-year contracts and fire them, you know what I mean, 11 months later. I think experience will resonate loudly around the league. And I think that will bode well for Mike McCarthy. You could make a case for him in Cleveland. You can make a case for him in Atlanta. You can make a case for him with either New York football team.
He would make a lot of sense in Atlanta. That sort of hadn't been floated. That kind of makes sense for me in terms of like the low key personality, somebody that will, you know, is like a comforting blanket for Arthur Blank. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if he feels like the need to go bolder than that from a branding and a marketing and a business part of it, because
I mean, Dan Quinn,
he's got this football Taj Mahal and nobody cares. You know what I mean? They care when his soccer team plays, not when his football team plays. So, yeah. You know, that I wonder how much that part of it will factor in. And hey, it's football. It's a business that always factors in. And in this case, maybe extreme. But it's been a while since he even hired someone who had formerly been an NFL head coach. Mm. Right? I mean, Mike Smith, no. Yeah. Was it Petrino before that?
Did he? Yeah.
And then was Petrino Mora before that?
Yeah, Petrino came from Louisville.
Yeah.
Mora before that.
He hasn't had a guy with an NFL winning head coach pedigree for quite some time. And
he's never hired a former head
right.
coach.
Yeah. So that, you know, does he sort of break from the mold, or does he, like some people have talked to me who know him a little bit and said college guys, but I don't see Matt Ryan fitting in and they're stuck with him. I don't see Matt Ryan being a fit. You know what I mean? In a Lincoln Riley offense.
Well, remember, I mean, so he had Dan Reeves. Dan Reeves was his first coach because he bought it in 2002.
But he inherited Dan Reeves, right?
Yeah, and then he fired Dan Reeves, and then Wade Phillips was the interim head coach. Then he hired Jim Mora from where was he? Where was Jim Mora when he hired him? He was.
Had he already been in? Mora wasn't in Seattle yet, was he? Had he already been?
Was he not?
Was he in college? He might have been a coordinator at that point. I don't know.
Are we sure he even had a head coaching job? He was the DC. He was the defensive coordinator with the 49ers. Okay.
Right.
Hired by the Falcons. And then when he got let go, that's when he went to Seattle.
Then he went to Seattle. Yeah.
And he ended up at UCLA in that disaster. Yes. And then Bobby Petrino hired from Louisville, of course, near the Vic disaster. Then Mike Smith came in from Jacksonville, right? He was the DC, I believe.
Yep.
When he had been
in Baltimore with Billick before
So,
yeah.
So this guy's got a type. DC.
Yeah. Does he break mold? You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean,
look, this is a quintessential billionaire football owner move where you hire college guy, you know, Petrino's your one. Like, he's hired two straight defensive guys, probably because Bobby Petrino burnt him so badly. You know, like two straight NFL defensive guys, as well as Mora before that. I always think about Mora as a college guy for some reason, but
yeah,
I mean, I think it would make a lot of sense to go offense here. And I would not, I mean, it's like the classic ex-girlfriend, thing that, you know, that you do. So
I mean, I think Mike McCarthy's going to be in a pretty good spot. One way or the other.
What are you hearing about? Let's talk about some quarterbacks. What are you hearing about Cam Newton? Because I don't know if we talked about this. I've been saying I thought it would be a long time before he came back.
And yeah.
It just clearly, like, what it seems like to me is that Cam needs foot surgery, but he doesn't want to have foot surgery because then he's done for the year and probably done forever with the Panthers. Does that sound about right?
It could be. Yeah. I mean, I think it would also just be how long is the recovery and what does that do for his ability to, if he is traded or whatever, you know what I mean? Get a big contract as part of the trade. Mm. Yeah. I mean, the timing, there's a lot going on for him and for them. I haven't been told that surgery, you know what I mean, is necessary at this point. Like, could you do it? I mean, I get, right? I mean, even if they're like, hey, you might not need it, you could always elect for it and say, well, I just want to start my recovery now. But the timing is kind of awkward, like I said, from that. I mean, how many weeks are we away from the combine, right? I mean, that's when this stuff would really be heating up. We're basically a couple months away, right?
Yeah.
We're November, December, well, three months away.
If Cam has surgery, there's really only one recourse, and it's him being cut by the Panthers to save salary cap space.
Or traded. I mean, depending on what somebody's willing to do, when he would be, you know, when could he clear a physical and all that stuff. But obviously right now it's just about winning football games, and he's not close to, you know, I was told Saturday night that he's not close to being cleared to practice fully, much less play. So, you know, we're now into November. He's weeks away from practicing. And then even then, when he starts to practice, given the way this thing is gone, you know what I mean? If there's weight-bearing issues, if there's ability to push off issues, if he can't be himself, then you're back where you started, and nobody knows. You know what I mean? Nobody knows how that's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, look, do we know for a fact? I mean, nobody knows except Cam and Dr. Anderson, I guess. But, I mean, this is, as you understand it, right, a Lisfranc injury.
Yeah.
I mean, this is – Brady Quinn came on this podcast. I keep telling people this. I don't understand why people aren't listening. But, like, Brady said the biggest regret of his entire football career was not having the surgery when he suffered the injury. Because, you know, you read about it. I mean, like, the longer you wait, the better the chance is that you're going to have to deal with that injury for a longer period of time and over a longer stretch of your life. And look, I get why Cam doesn't want to have surgery right now. And maybe, and look, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not his doctor. I don't know. But, you know, you're probably looking at, like, I don't know, like 16 weeks of recovery. So, you know, in terms of like wearing a brace and a walking boot and all that, I mean, the longer they wait, the less likely it is that they can trade him this offseason, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Or, you know, who knows? Does he just wait and then you trade him as is? And you know what I mean? You let the other team's doctors talk to him beforehand and they come up with their own plan of attack. You know what I mean? And, the trade's not – can't be completely formalized until March, but – you know what I mean? You agree to the trade in February, and you know what I mean? And his doctors and their doctors agree on, you know what I mean? Whatever procedure or, you know, whatever treatments they think are in order. And that process starts out, and yeah, he's technically still on the Panthers roster until, you know what I mean, whatever the first day of the league year is. But he's kind of already rolling, you know what I mean, with who knows.
What percent chance do you give Cam Newton ever playing another snap for the Panthers?
I don't know, man. I have no idea.
I need a very specific percent. All right, no, it's fine. Okay. What about Andy Dalton? Is he toasting?
Yeah, that's over.
Okay. cut, trade, or what do you think?
Oh, I think that he's it's a tradable contract. I mean, it's a tradable contract. I mean, it's like 1 year, $16 million. That's not a steep price at all. Brock Osweiler was making $18 million a year not that long ago. You got guys like Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota making 20-something on fifth-year options. I think he'll be in play in a couple of places. Tampa, to me, is most interesting. You know, if you look at how that team is built offensively, it kind of reminds me of those early Bengals teams he was on, where if everything's around him, he can be highly functional. And we'll, you know, BA at this point, you know, if the Winston thing is over, and look, he played his butt off yesterday, but I have a hard time seeing that ownership group re-up with him for any kind of lucrative contract. And if you're Bruce Arians and you're not, you know what I mean, and you've been through all he's been through health-wise and whatever, you know what I mean? Are you really going to, and they're going to win probably too many games to be way up there for a quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, is he going to try to break in a second-round pick or a third-round pick and start with him? Or would you go get a 32-year-old Andy Dalton? Tack on a couple team-friendly years if you want. You know what I mean? And see how that goes. You know, could he be a fit for the Bears? Anything's better than what's going on there right now. You know, and that's a team that I can't see them. They'll probably keep Trubisky around just because they're stubborn and they made that hole, so they might as well poop in it.
Is that what you do with a hole? You dig a hole.
I guess if you're stuck in the middle of nowhere, like camping or whatever, right? And you have no other choice. I guess that's what you do. So I see them. I won't even say doubling down, trading up for that cat, and you know, and that was panned by me and others in real time.
Yeah,
was doubling down. They'll probably quadruple down or whatever by keeping him around. But
well, they're not going to just cut Trubisky. Like I think,
right? I don't think so. They're too invested in it. But there's got to be real. There's got to be another guy with an NFL like what Mariota and Tannehill this year. You know what I mean? Like, and it could be Tannehill, who's played really well.
It could be Mariota.
And I guess. Or like Andy Dalton at least has been to the playoffs and like he's had some really productive years and he's only 32. I don't know. With that defense, that might be exactly what they're looking for. But yeah, those are two teams that I know Arians liked them a lot in college and coming out.
Who, Dalton?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. One more. Jags. Foles time?
Not for me. Ooh. I would stick with Minshew. I mean, that was ugly. That was bad. That's the first time the kid to me looked overwhelmed and like, you know, a little bit out of his depth, but that happens to all young quarterbacks. And there was a lot on the line there. And, you know, I give props to Houston. They came to play.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I know how I look at the Jags is not the way they look at themselves. They've been sort of stubborn to a fault, but I would be looking at it saying, I know we gave Nick Foles all this money. But Nick Foles is not a – like, when you need 16 weeks out of Nick Foles, when do you get it? Like, when is it – you know what I mean? That's not been his story.
You get 6 weeks down the stretch.
Right. And you've got one more year of Foles, and then you're going to be walking away from him in all likelihood and looking at another quarterback. So you got a one-year window with Foles, and you got a potential 15-year window with this kid. And he went into that game yesterday – and with not a whole lot around him other than DJ Shark, who frankly hasn't started to look like much himself until this guy was the quarterback. And he was fourth in the league in touchdown to interception ratio. And he's on pace for 4,000 yards. And he had protected the football. I know he's fumbled a little bit, but he's not thrown a lot of jump balls or done silly things with the ball. And he had that team still mattering in the middle of the season. I mean, people have bad games, but I would be taking the long view saying we might have really found something here, and I'm going to prize his development above all else. And, you know, if we have to trade Foles for pennies on the dollars, I mean, these are billionaires. So be it. But you're right. They probably will go to Foles because they gave him all this money and whatever. But, I mean, I just think you look at organizations. I mean, Remember when the Eagles paid Bradford all that money and then traded him anyway? Because, you know what, like, it's too good of an offer not to, and we'll go with Wentz. Because long-term, you know what I mean, when we do get to where we want to go, it's probably going to be with Wentz now. It ended up being Wentz and Foles as the guy. And I contrast it to these guys and doubling down on Bortles, and then now, you know, if you go to a 32-year-old who's tended to break down, I mean, I get it, I guess, but I think Minshew's played well enough that, okay, one bad game against a team that, you know, outplayed us across the board, let's see how he responds to that. Let's coach him up during the bye week. And, again, I mean, he's been like the rookie of the month like six times.
Yeah.
I mean, the rookie of the week like six times.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you think you found a goal.
Compare his numbers to the first overall pick. It ain't even close.
Right. I mean, if you think you found gold in a late round rookie and you go back to Nick Foles because you want to try to save your job, then you're probably not good at your job in the first place. And what you should be doing is going to Shad Khan and saying, look, dude, I know everybody here's on the hot seat. I know things are going a little bit south. We think this kid's legit. Yeah, he's selling tickets to the mustaches. Let's try and see what we can do down the stretch, but we need you to back us here. And maybe he's like, tough. I mean, yeah, no, I'm not backing you. But I mean, like, I mean, the value of a late round rookie quarterback who could potentially be a franchise quarterback cannot be overstated. And I couldn't agree with you more. To go to Nick.
It's not a small sample. I mean, he played half the season.
Yeah.
And he had one mediocre game, one bad game, and a bunch of games where he did some pretty impressive stuff and wasn't just along for the ride. He was helping your mediocre football team win football games.
Yeah. I mean, he was bad against Houston. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
He's also in London. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff going on, whatever. And I think he knew that. One more good game, and they probably, you know, they were probably going to come out and pronounce him their guy. And so you got the weight of all that, and I mean, but I'm just like, okay, well, you know, let's see, you know, Danny Dimes tonight, right? Like what that looks like. I know what Sam Darnold looked like yesterday. You know what I mean? I know what Baker Mayfield looked like all this year. You know, I know Kyler Murray inside the red zone. I mean, Kyler Murray between the 20s is pretty impressive, but. You know, when it's money time, he's not getting that team in the end zone. This guy's thrown 13 touchdown passes to two interceptions through 8 weeks on pace for 4,000 yards. He was 12th in the league in QB rating. The only guys with a better touchdown to interception ratio than him in the league were Rodgers, Mahomes, and Russell Wilson.
Mm.
But go back to Nick Foles. Godspeed.
Yeah. All right. Let's get you out of here. Good stuff, JLC, as always. You can follow Jason Lacanfora on Twitter at Jason Lacanfora. Watch him on the NFL Today every Sunday from noon to 1. Watch him on CBS Sports HQ as well. And talk to you next week, buddy.
Sounds good, my friend.
CBS Wednesday. We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
Citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.